Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. Issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
On his website, he tells himself to be a Christian and going to the right.
This guy was not in any way associated with active Christianity or active performing of any faith.
Lord, I pray you bless the drivers and use them tonight. May they put on a performance worthy of this great track. In Jesus' name, boogity, 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 amen.
These parables are not about us. These parables are about him, the Christ, who needs no repentance.
Lord of truck drivers, love issues, etc.
Well, ordinarily we want to support, don't we all? We all want to support foundations that are looking for cures of any kind of disease. And of course, especially in the West, it appears that breast cancer is one of those diseases that has grown to apparently epidemic proportions. It is really far more common than it apparently used to be. And you'll see women and groups running in the park, wearing the pink. Not unusual at all, but there are some concerns from Ohio's Catholic bishops about donating to the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation because possible connections to abortion and Planned Parenthood. We'll find out what those connections may be. We'll also talk about DOMA, its possible repeal, the Defense of Marriage Act, and same-sex marriage new in New York with Jennifer Roback Morse in the first few minutes of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, the 26th of July. I invite your questions or comments for the next hour. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio with questions or comments. We get them in real time. Talk back at issuesetc.org or send us a tweet at issuesetc. A little bit later, Scott Klusendorf will be joining us. We'll talk about pro-lifers and the substance view of human dignity and value. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me on.
Normally, supporting a cure for breast cancer is something people can do with a completely clear conscience. They can go do the walk or the run and give their money, wear the pink, the ribbon, all that kind of thing. Why are the bishops in Ohio concerned?
Well, they're concerned because the Susan Komen Foundation, I guess it's called, that supports so much breast cancer research, is a contributor to Planned Parenthood. And across the country in various places, they have contributed to Planned Parenthood. And that, of course, Planned Parenthood is involved in providing abortions. And so when Susan Komen says, well, we're just doing breast health and breast cancer awareness things with Planned Parenthood, you have to shrug your shoulders and say, is there no one else who can deliver those kind of services? That's really kind of lame. So that's one of the issues. And the other issues is some concern that some of what the Susan Komen Foundation has done has been to be involved directly or indirectly in embryonic stem cell research. And so when the bishops of Ohio basically said, there's not going to be any Catholic institutional support for Susan Komen. Susan Komen turned around and said, well, wait a minute, we're not really doing that stuff, and they kind of backed away from a lot of that. And I honestly think that that's all to the good, that the bishops put some pressure on them, and it sounds like Susan Komen is doing the right thing and reevaluating whether some of their activities have been such a great idea in the end.
What is it that Planned Parenthood is out there soliciting connections with these other organizations that, my goodness, the two could get along perfectly without one another here? Why is it that Planned Parenthood, in your mind, why is it that they are able to elicit donations or some kind of support from these organizations?
That's a very good question, and I honestly, you know, I'm not involved in sort of backroom deals of these kind of nonprofit organizations to sort of see who's making the overtures to whom. You know, what, maybe it's Susan Coleman. You know, Susan Coleman seems to have their little pink stickers on everything, so they obviously make overtures to a lot of different groups, I would guess, and I guess Planned Parenthood does too. So in this particular case, who solicited who, I'm really not aware of that. But I think the real message of this is that Susan Coleman is getting the idea that this is not such a great ally for them to have, that this is a tainted ally. And that's what we want. I mean, I think that's what the pro-life movement needs to be able to say, is that, you know, if you want to get something done, pick out somebody besides Planned Parenthood to get it done with. And I think that's all to the good.
This has to be, at least the way I think it'll probably be portrayed in the press, as just more fuddy-duddy, backward Roman bishops just wanting to spoil everybody's party, or worse yet, being misogynistic, being against women. What are your thoughts there?
That's pretty hilarious, actually. You know, as if there's no way to support breast cancer research without also at the same time supporting Planned Parenthood. I mean, that's really crazy. And the other thing that's really odd about this is that there's a lot of very suggestive evidence that supports a link between breast cancer, an elevated risk for breast cancer, and having abortions, right? You know, in other words, the breasts develop during pregnancy. One's breast develops in order to become nursing, right? You're becoming ready for nursing. And an abortion interrupts that whole developmental process. And so there's some evidence that that puts a woman at risk, at increased risk for breast cancer, particularly if you have a family history of breast cancer. So you would think that the Susan Coleman Foundation would be interested in studying that link and promoting that link, and at the very least, steering people away from something that may have a clear environmental impact on your probability of getting breast cancer. So it seems to me that the bishops are being more far-reaching here, have a more visionary picture and a more holistic picture of what's good for women and women's overall health. I mean, nobody, the number of cases where a woman needs an abortion for her health are so small. There's so few cases. The vast majority of abortions in America, of course, are purely elective and have no medical necessity whatsoever. So the idea that women's health somehow uniquely depends on the ability to have abortions, you know, this is a connection that Susan Coleman shouldn't be making. They really should, you know, separate themselves from this kind of connection, because it doesn't serve their purpose. It doesn't serve their mission at all to allow themselves to be connected to an organization of this kind.
With about 30 seconds here, I have been frustrated, because we've talked to people about the abortion breast cancer link for years now here on Issues, et cetera. I've been frustrated by the degree to which that is unheard of in all of the coverage that breast cancer gets. It is seldom, if ever, mentioned popularly. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that? And it is a tangible link that reputable researchers have found again and again and again. About 30 seconds for response.
That's right. It's not something that the bishops made up or something, right? I mean, that link has been replicated enough times that certainly there's something there, right? It's not. It may not be a big risk for every single woman, but it's certainly something that people should be informed about. And I think the reason it's not picked up on, Todd, is that abortion is the key, one of the key linchpins to the whole sexual revolution. And the idea of the sexual revolution is that everyone is entitled to unlimited sexual activity without a live baby resulting. And of course, the backup plan for making you have baby-free sex is abortion. So if your contraception fails, you've got to have abortion as a backup. So if you go into the doctor and say, you know, I'm here for my abortion because I'm entitled to it, and the doctor says, well, you know what, you've got some risk factors here, and really, honestly, abortion is contraindicated for your case, and we need to find another way to solve your problem. You know, that's the way responsible medicine is usually done with virtually any other medication or procedure. There's more than one way to solve the problem. And so in this case, it's only with abortion and pregnancy termination that the idea that the procedure itself is the thing that you're entitled to. And so if there were a whole list of things that made abortion contraindicated for people, then you couldn't go around with a straight face and say you're entitled to sex without consequences, that that's an entitlement that would spoil the whole program, you know. So all of, there are many of these kinds of links and concerns and problems, whether it's breast cancer or depression or night terrors or infertility risks and so on. All of these kinds of risks are consistently downplayed, even when they're well documented. And I think that's the main explanation for it, Todd, is that it's basically an ideological explanation, that people are not simply promoting good health, they're not simply promoting choice, they're promoting a whole worldview that places abortion at the center of the claim that sex without consequences is an entitlement.
By the powers vested in me by the state of New York, I pronounce you both married.
That is New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg officiating at a same-sex marriage in his state of New York. I'm wondering here, and we've only got less than a minute before we need to take our first break here, Jennifer. Some are portraying this. I heard it over the weekend portrayed by National Public Radio as the tipping point in national acceptance of same-sex marriage. Your response with less than a minute.
Well, if this is acceptance of same-sex so-called marriages, I think you should look outside of Mayor Bloomberg's window and look in the neighborhoods. And what you would have seen in Manhattan on Sunday, it was 10,000 people rallying in favor of traditional, conjugal, natural marriage, marriage without adjective. 10,000 people, Hispanic, Black, Catholic, Protestants. The streets were filled of people reacting against the redefinition of marriage. And so if this is a tipping point, I think it's a tipping point for something, but maybe not what NPR thinks.
Well, when we come back, we'll talk more with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse about same-sex marriage in New York, and then we'll take up the issue of DOMA's demise, the Defense of Marriage Act. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guests, Pastor Matt Harrison, Deaconess Pam Nielsen, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be speaking at the Premier Worship Conference of 2011. Sing His Praise, His Love Declare. It's July 27th through the 29th on the campus of Concordia University, Nebraska. For more information on the worship conference, Sing His Praise, His Love Declare, visit seward2011.org or call 402-643-2983.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received Him, who believed in His name, the Gospel of John says, He gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest for next few minutes of the program. Right now we're talking about New York celebrating the first same-sex marriages over the weekend. What did you make of, and this has been all over the place, what did you make of the Niagara Falls ceremony that was conducted there by the mayor of Niagara Falls, New York. And it was done, I think they tried to time it for the stroke of midnight, Jennifer, a rather elderly lesbian couple deciding that they would get the very first crack that they could at same-sex marriage in New York. And it was a big press event, celebrated, in fact. What did you make of it?
Well, you know, Todd, I absented myself from that particular celebration. You know, they didn't invite me, so I didn't even tune in and watch. I think it's pretty hilarious, actually, you know, that two old women have decided that they need to be married, you know, that this is the crowning point of their lives, kind of a thing. And I can't help but chuckle when you played the tape there of Mayor Bloomberg pronouncing a wedding ceremony, and what he said was, "I now pronounce you both married." He couldn't say husband and wife. He couldn't say wife and wife, husband and husband. And so, what I want your listeners to notice is that we are going to lose all the words that have any hint of gender in them. That instead of being a husband and a wife, you're going to be just partners, or you're going to be just married. And so I would really urge people to take command of the situation and use the gendered words wherever possible, to call yourself husband and wife all the time, to say mom and dad all the time, to avoid words like gender-neutral words like parenting or parent whenever you possibly can. And I think particularly people in the state of New York, and I know you have plenty of on-demand listeners from the state of New York, I would really recommend that people say as often as possible and as publicly as possible, kids need a mom and a dad. Kids need a mom and a dad. And to say out loud, publicly, as often as possible, mothers and fathers, men and women, are not interchangeable. There's no such thing as a generic person. To take command of the fact that we are gendered beings, created by God as gendered beings, and that we know as Christians and as believing, practicing Orthodox Jews, we know that everything God created is good. And the fact that we're male and female is not some kind of cosmic injustice, but in fact is something good and designed by God for our benefit. So all of that is in danger of being wiped out by the legal redefinition of marriage, and people need to speak out as plainly as they possibly can, while it's still legal, because it may not continue to be legal.
One more question on that. National Public Radio reported that for the first time, a general survey of the American public shows about 53% of people with no problem regarding same-sex marriage in the future. And if you go to young people, they were claiming somewhere in the 70s percent for acceptance of same-sex marriage. And they're making the argument it's inevitable. What's your response?
Well, the only way it's inevitable is if all of us give up and go home in discouragement because we keep reading these NPR polls. You know, I mean, that's the only way it's inevitable, and we simply can't give up and go home. And the polls, if you look at them closely, Todd, you will find that they are very sensitive to the wording of the question. That is, if you compare it, if you ask people, do you favor same-sex marriage, it depends on what you're comparing it to. Do you favor civil unions? Do you favor the status quo? Do you favor banning same-sex marriage? If you say banning same-sex marriage, people all say, oh, no, I don't want that, you know? So it's very sensitive to the way the question is asked. But if you ask those same young people, what do they think about divorce? What do they think about the stability of marriage? What do they think about whether kids need a mom and a dad? You will find them being very, very traditional. And I encounter this in my work life all the time. The next generation is very keen to get married and stay married. And what they have in mind is really traditional marriage and a place to raise their children. But if you ask them questions about same-sex marriage, often they're quite befuddled and confused because they've been fed a steady diet of media, really, honestly, propaganda, media and academic propaganda, which, if you look at it, is not just pro-homosexual, it's also anti-gender, it's anti-sex, right? It's pro-generic human and really doing everything possible to obliterate the differences between male and female and pretend like they don't exist or don't matter. And so that's our job at the Ruth Institute, is to help people to see that you can't really have one without the other. You can't have lifelong married love and put a bag over your head and pretend that you're not a man or a woman. That's not how it works. If you get married to somebody, the fact that you're of opposite genders is going to affect every aspect of your life, and you can't hide from that fact. And so to have the state say that gender is irrelevant to marriage and that gender in turn is irrelevant to parenthood is to seriously mislead everyone. Male, female, straight, or gay, it's to seriously mislead everyone and thereby reduce people's chances of successfully pulling off a happy marriage. So that's one of many reasons why we need to be vigilant on this matter and simply not give up and go home.
The president has long called for a legislative repeal of the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, which continues to have a real impact on the lives of real people, our families, friends, and neighbors.
That is Press Secretary Jay Carney in the White House talking about what is being called the Respect of Marriage Act that has its very first Senate hearing. I'm curious, Jennifer, the Respect of Marriage Act sounds like it would be building upon the Defense of Marriage Act. What's going on here?
Well, you know, they're playing games with words, as is typical. I mean, the act that was passed in, I can't remember now if it was in New York or in Illinois. I think it was in Illinois. They started by calling it the Religious Liberty and Defense of Marriage Act or something like that. You know, it was ridiculous to be talking like that. They're trying to change the subject so that you don't know what they're really talking about. What they're really talking about, of course, is removing the federal protection for states that wish to maintain gender-based marriage. That's what they're talking about in abolishing the DOMA. And they're talking about putting the full weight of the federal government behind the key plank of the gay agenda. And that's what they're really talking about. They're not talking about whatever their euphemism was, respecting marriage or whatever. They don't have a clue what marriage is. And if you really press them and say, well, what is marriage? What's the social purpose of marriage? Why do we need marriage in the first place? They'll all sputter and give you a whole list of things that have to do with what private individuals want, but that have nothing to do with any kind of social purpose as to why a society would want or need marriage in the first place, as people are completely clueless.
I'd like your response to something that Representative John Lewis of Georgia said while testifying before the Senate committee that was hearing arguments for and against the Respect of Marriage Act that would overturn the Defense of Marriage Act. Lewis said, "As a child, I tasted the bitter fruits of racism and discrimination, and I did not like it. And in 1996, when Congress passed the Defense of Marriage Act, the taste of that old bitter fruit filled my mouth once again. The Defense of Marriage Act is a stain on our democracy. We must do away with this unjust discriminatory law once and for all. It reminds me of another dark time in our nation's history, in many years when states passed laws banning blacks and whites from marrying." Your response?
Okay, with all due respect, Representative Lewis, that's just idiotic. I mean, that's just an idiotic comparison because, look, the reason they had anti-miscegenation statutes was because they knew perfectly well that a white man and a black woman could get together and perform the natural purposes of marriage, which is that they could procreate, right? They were afraid of those little mixed-race babies. And so it's perfectly obvious that a mixed-race couple can be married under the natural law of marriage and what marriage is. And it's perfectly obvious that a same-sex couple, whatever it is they're doing, it's something quite different from the natural purposes of marriage. And so to equate miscegenation laws with the gender requirement for marriage is completely silly. Gender is an essential feature of marriage, and race is a completely irrelevant feature of marriage, and that's all that was going on there. And the other thing that Representative Lewis has to come to grips with is the fact that easily 70% of the black community completely disagrees with him. Most of them are deeply offended at the equation of redefining marriage with the civil rights movement. I mean, they're offended by it. Just this past weekend, I was at a Tea Party rally in South Central L.A., which was billed as a black Tea Party rally, and it was a group of African-American citizens who were rallying outside the NAACP's national convention, basically holding up signs that, you know, that were pro-life and pro-marriage and pro-small government and all of those kinds of things. And it was very interesting to be part of that crowd and to just that was a crowd where I could say without any hesitation, without any apology, you know, I am a God-fearing Christian woman and the Republican Party has left me. I have not left the Republican Party. The Republican Party has left me. We have same-sex so-called marriage in New York. because the Republican Party caused that to happen. And I came to this rally here in South Central L.A. to support the African Americans who are conservative, fiscal and social conservatives. I came here today, you guys, because I need some new friends. And they all cheered. You know, they all cheered. We'll be friends with you, Dr. J. You know, and they're in that same situation, too. They're used to the NAACP and black liberals being their friends, and they're looking for new friends, too. So I think that people like John Lewis and the gay lobby and these people, they're the ones who are on the wrong side of history because they're promoting something that is completely unsustainable, that can only be maintained by massive intervention by the state. Only the government can prop up something as artificial as same-sex so-called marriage, whereas natural marriage can take care of itself without any help from the government at all.
We only have about 30 seconds left, but I did want you to at least tell our listeners one more time about a conference you've got coming up later this week called It Takes a Family to Raise a Village, with about 30 seconds.
Yes, Todd. We're having our third annual student leadership conference out here in San Diego. It's called It Takes a Family to Raise a Village, and it will be here in San Diego. And if you live in Southern California, you're welcome to come down Thursday night for the opening event of that conference. But be aware, everybody should be aware, that what we're doing is training the next generation of student leaders to become activists on their campus for marriage and life issues. And I tell you, Todd, we've got some very inspiring young people coming to this event because we've got students who are already very active on their campuses for marriage issues, for life issues. Your listeners, I really hope your listeners will go to our website and take a look at what we're doing, sign up for our newsletter, and if you feel so moved, contribute to the support of the work that we're doing with these students, because these kids, these are the ones who are going to turn things around. Because unlike the kind of parrots and the little robots that are being created by the government schools and the media, these kids know what they think. They know what they believe, and they're coming to us to learn why they believe it and to learn better how to defend what they believe. And so these are the kids that I know your listeners are going to want to support.
Folks, you can find out all about It Takes a Family to Raise a Village at our website. We have a link right there under the Listen on Demand page, issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, thank you again.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, Scott Klusendorf will be our guest. We're going to talk about pro-lifers and the substance view of human dignity.
Are you looking for a church where you can receive the gifts of God in the gospel and the sacraments and in the church's historic worship with lively music? Then come to Hope Lutheran Church in South St. Louis. We're located on the corner of Brannan and Neosho Streets at 5218 Neosho. You can also reach us on the World Wide Web at www.hopelutheranstl.org and give us a call at 314-352-0014. There is hope in St. Louis.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11-inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. Issuesetc.org. Go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Turning Point.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
What caused Abby Johnson, the director of a profitable Planned Parenthood clinic in the college town of Bryan, Texas, to leave her job and become a pro-life advocate? In her new book, Unplanned, she explains the turning point came when her assistance was needed during an abortion. Unlike dozens of others she had witnessed, this one required an ultrasound. There on the monitor, she saw the ugly reality of abortion as it was taking place. The ultrasound screen doesn't lie. It shows a baby, And as more women see these images, the more women there are who reject abortion.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.